Hello, everyone, and welcome back to RPG R&D. I'm Jess. I use she or they pronouns, and I'm one half of Wannabe Games, and I make tabletop role playing games. And I'm here with my co-host, as always, Craig Campbell. Hello, Craig.
Hi, Jess. I am Craig Campbell, he, him pronouns, and I am the owner of Nerdburger Games. I make role-playing games, too, and I'm working on a card game. Woohoo!
Yay!
it's good to playtest. Second round of playtesting. And we are here with returning guest, Jason. Hello. Welcome aboard.
Hello, and thank you for having me back. Jason Pitt, he, him, owner, dishwasher of Genesis of Legend Publishing. Over in Canada.
Wow, they
and
got you
I am
washing
happy
dishes.
To be back.
A promotion over there.
Yeah, you get paid more.
Is that something I can buy on your website if my dishwasher stops working?
Yeah, but the shipping is nightmarish.
Oh yeah, I suppose.
thanks for coming on, Jason. Good to see you. We have, I know that this is a very special topic because I've seen some of your games that make good appropriate use of this topic. Craig, you want to jump us into what we're talking about today on the episode?
Yeah, we're talking about factions, organizations, groups of people that are trying to do a thing, and how we can make those interesting and engaging from a GMing and a design standpoint. We'll probably flip around a little bit on both of those standpoints because I think there's plenty of intertwining between the two, especially given that GMs are often also kind of designers and they're house ruling and coming up with things that the game necessarily doesn't cover.
Yep.
Or do the way they want. So how can we make factions, organizations, guilds, whatever they might be called in your game, really rock and roll and not just be like, oh, here's a name for a thing and we're all supposed to like either think it's really cool or all supposed to be kind of worried about it or fearful of it or whatever.
Yeah, Jason, you want to talk about why you chose this topic?
So I chose this topic in part because I find that factions are fabulous ways of precariously balancing boulders of plot. Each of them is about to explode. Each of them has their own motivation to go in a certain direction. And the players are going to be walking around trying to figure out exactly which of these is going to be falling next. So there's a lot of potential dramatic energy in factions. So, I originally created factions as a GM. So let's start with that. What is a faction for a GM? Then I think it'd be great to talk about how some factions will get hard-coded into games and even some mechanics for them from a designer perspective. But they're all basically fulfilling a single function of give a motivation for a group of NPCs to go in a particular direction and then have interrelations between these various groups. There's just so much plot that comes out of that, and it is something that develops organically.
Yeah, I think with factions and organizations and all of that, I mean, a lot of really cool stories focus on just characters and then don't really get into like their organizational like if I'm watching a movie like Pirates of the Caribbean, it's the first one that comes to mind. They talk about the East India Trade Company. They talk about like the government and they're the pirates. But the plot is centering around the characters, of course, because that's what we like. But their motivations are often being provided by their allegiances to these factions. Well, why are all of these pirates all on one side? Well, because they're on the ship. That's part of their faction. Why is, I mean, and their personal motivations can go up against the organizational motivations, and that really helps drive the story. And I think that I don't know, those things are always interesting to me. And then you can, let's say your Admiral Norris, I forget what his name is exactly, maybe that's exactly it, and I do remember, your NPC has an untimely demise that you were not planning for. Well, it doesn't matter because his motivation was the faction's motivation, and you can just slot in, you know, you can keep things keep going just because an NPC is dead doesn't mean or gone or whatever, or has changed allegiances, doesn't mean that those motivations aren't still going. It's very hard to ruin your plot, so to speak, just because, crap, they killed my big bad evil guy so early on. Well, it doesn't matter, it's a whole faction, and you can kill the man but you can't kill the idea, sort of thing, which is what I like about them. I like that you called it potential energy too, after doing the metaphor of stacking boulders, because literally potential energy right there. You don't anything could explode at any time. And it's like this idea that the world is living, and there's this stuff that could happen even if you don't do anything, or especially if you don't do anything. You have to go out into the world and change things. It's not the plot only happens when you're looking at it kind of deal.
So that's actually somewhat derived from a metaphor that was produced by the Bakers, Miguel and Vincent. Specifically that a lot of older designs have a status quo, like a default to the status quo. So the game physics and dramatic physics are effectively concave. Things will roll down to a certain point and then push you back to that equilibrium. Whereas they designed Apocalypse World, where it was convex. Everything is precariously balanced and will fall. And there is no stability. Just everything will fall the moment you nudge it slightly. So that pushes the plot in a very dynamic direction and keeps things from getting stale. So that's where all of this potential energy thought sort of bubbled up from. The psychic maelstrom.
And it creates dynamic tension before. Or dramatic tension is what I was looking for. Before it falls, before the boulder falls or starts rolling down the hill, generates a lot of tension in the hopefully, if you're communicating it adequately, the players are going to be like, oh geez, like preparing for the worst scenario, thinking about the plans of what can we do to keep this way, what can we do to push it where it needs to go, but only a little bit. What happens if something, you know, goes awry and we suddenly have to deal with this problem? I mean, there's like hours of role playing that come out of just that sort of thing. And then, you know, you can actually have some of those things play out.
You have to here's the tricky part. You have all these factions that you've already created, or maybe they're already outlined in the book and you find them really cool. In order for there to be any of that tension, the characters have to know about them, and how are you going to introduce that to them in a way that's fun and natural, and not just like here's a line of people with their calling cards and ooh, they're part of the secret underground Apple salesman organization. Like what are they? I was gonna say the thieving society, but secret underground thieves, that's been overdone. Like you have to. Creating it is one thing, but then like actually introducing that tension and showing the players the stakes, that's always the part that I spend the most time on. But like it takes the longest for me. Creating the factions, sometimes they're like, I have a source book, I'm gonna use these, which I know a lot of GMs like to do. They just like wanna play out of a source book, which is great, but there's still work to be done at that point.
So the way that I handle that personally is, as a GM, I will tag NPCs to one or two factions and say they are sympathetic or belonging to these groups. So if Amir is a supporter of the Free Companies, but is sympathetic to the Dust Keepers, then okay, you learn about what this person does and you see, oh, they are kind of disgusting human supremacist, but they're also very spiritual. So like maybe that's an interesting complex character, and you manage to explain what two of the factions are just through that simple description, through the mask of Amir, the slightly racist NPC. So I find it's a way of giving depth and giving direction to existing NPCs, and an easy way to inspire the creation of new NPCs.
Another great way I've seen it done in a story, at least, and I know that there's a tabletop role-playing game being set in the same setting. Mild spoilers for the first seasons, the first couple seasons of the Magnus Archives. The Magnus Archives is a podcast where it starts off and it's just like kind of, ooh, they're recording some spooky stories. And as the story goes, you start realizing that the characters and the stories are connected to certain types of fears. And each of them are kind of listed. You don't necessarily have to even say that, oh yeah, these people, like all of these bombings in your story are related to such and such political group. Maybe they're just seeing these things happen, no one's claiming them, and then you can start learning, oh, they're all connected. You can start like playing on the conspiratorial minds of your players and have them discover cool secret organizations that maybe they weren't supposed to, and now they know. Now there's this whole conspiracy. Are they gonna put it out in the open? Like that's another possible direction. If you are relying more on the secrecy of these kind of holding the tension too. I think the Magnus Archives did a really good job with that. They're not traditional factions and then they end up playing with the concept later too, but they're not like traditional factions, which is an interesting twist.
So one of the interesting elements there is, as a GM, I am extremely lazy, and I often rely on demonstrating that NPCs reflect factions, then introducing NPCs to the characters, and letting them pattern recognize and interpolate what other factions are. So if Amir and Samara and Lucien are all super interested in relics for some reason, maybe there's a relic faction we don't know about. Well, there wasn't, but now there is. Thank you.
Or maybe they form them in the process of you playing the game. Factions, you know, or factions break off in a smaller, more factions, you know, that this happens all the time. I think if you really want to see how these things work, join any leftist organization and you will see how quickly one leftist organization becomes two. It happens all the time.
I think a smaller version of a faction is called a fraction.
Oh, yes. No, that's a numerator or a denominator. Sorry.
But I find myself a lot of times, if when it comes to a faction that I want to have some level of longevity, that's going to become, central to the story, is to almost treat it like a character. The faction has goals. What is it trying to achieve? Does it have short range goals, long range goals? Are there any pie in the sky goals? Like, we really wish we could do this thing, but it's so far out of our grasp right now, but we're slowly kind of moving toward maybe being able to address it at some point. And what are its needs? What does it need to just exist? And what does it need to achieve those various goals? A faction, a well put together faction will be as complex as an interesting, well put together character that isn't just one monumental thing. They are all of these different things. And do they have goals and needs and you know, sub factions, as we say, that are actually kind of in opposition to one another, or like will if this goal is attained, it makes this goal harder to do. Like, and how do the members trying to resolve that? And is it, you know, is there a fight going on between members of the factions? Like this group wants to get this out of, to get this to happen. One group wants to get that to happen, and the other group's going to get kind of screwed in the process. And when you have all of that kind of worked out, you also have like what happens if the characters become interested in the faction, if they want to join the faction, what does that look like? One of the things that I found myself thinking about quite a bit is, you know, comparing these factions that we're inventing for a game to just organizations and secret societies and fraternities and other kind of groups that have a particular goal. Is there, you know, are there initiations? Are there, do they have rituals? And I don't necessarily mean dark magical rituals, but just are there things that they do a certain way that can reinforce very specific things about the faction? And it gives the players things to latch onto. It's like, well, I'm going to go in, we're going to infiltrate this, this organization. But one of the things that they make you do is they slap you with like a truth telling drug or a zone of truth or something. And you have to reveal some terrible secret about yourself. So that way they have something to hold over you should you betray them, because that's how this organization functions. That gives something like, what am I going to, what can I tell them that'll satisfy them, but isn't going to completely screw me? Like, you know, or that I'm not prepared to reveal to the group at this point.
How do I get a hold on all of these secrets that apparently every single member in this organization?
Yeah, so now, right, exactly. Now I want to get in. I'm willing to sacrifice my secret and the potential that it will become revealed just because it means that I might be able to get in and get to the secrets of these other people. Yeah, so you can start thinking about like all of these different things about how the faction might function, and how complex it can be, and how much it can be like a really well-rounded character. If you can do that, if you can make the faction itself live and breathe, you don't have to depend as strongly on an NPC to be the face of the faction. It's helpful. You've got that NPC. That's great, because that gives the character someone to talk to. But you've got this entity that has a life of its own. And keeping in mind that, like, just like characters continue to grow when you're not looking at them, like Jess said, the world, you know, the adventure doesn't stop. The world doesn't stop if the characters aren't around. Like, that faction's doing stuff. The group goes off on some adventure and they go traveling far away and come back, you know, months later. What happened with that faction? Hopefully it's not exactly where it was. Hopefully there's been some developments that the players can latch onto.
It's also a possibility to keep your players from just willy-nilly getting rid of somebody that's causing them some trouble, because maybe they are the glue that's holding this entire organization together. And if you collapse this organization, maybe that destroys the economy of an entire city. And that's for a lot of players, maybe murder is not a huge deal because it's fiction and it's stories, but having a bigger consequence from the death of a person. Now we're talking. Now maybe you want that to happen, maybe you really don't want that to happen. Maybe you need to fill in that vacuum. There could be other consequences other than, oh, this is really annoying person that we didn't like is gone.
So one thing that I tend to do when I'm designing factions as a GM is I try to set up a distinct worldview and paradigm for each one, in which they are the good guys. So, random example, my game After the War. There is a faction. The main problem was there's a galactic war, memetic infection, no one trusts anyone else, and they're trying to rebuild. So, there is a faction that is the Free Companies, and they're effectively local militias and defense forces, and they're trying to just keep people safe, sort of community organizing, local defense. But so they view themselves as the good guys, but they tend to organize and protect people who are like them who happen to all be humans. So they think they are local militias who are trying to help, but they're only helping the humans. So you've got an understanding why they think that they are the good guys. And then you see the twist of, and this is why other people think that they're not. And then by contrast, you've got, you know, the peacekeepers who effectively say, yeah, so anyone who's corrupted by that war, we need to hunt them down and murder them because they're dangerous to the entire community. They're also trying to keep people safe. They're trying to do the same thing, but their solution is kill it with fire. It's the only one way to be safe. Which is also, there's a lot of potential energy with that statement.
There's also the consideration of, like, does this organization want everyone to think that the way they do is the right way? If you are, or for example, if you're doing like you have megacorps in your game, the ultimate goal of a megacorp is to become a soul monopoly. That's all they want. They want to absorb. And that means they're ever constantly wanting to expand. And a lot of this also happens with like political groups. Like a political group often wants the more people who think like us, the better. That means we'll be able to do whatever. And that means that they're often willing to make compromises if it suits their interests down the line. Because an organization is going to live longer potentially than the life of any mortal that is in its faction. These things might change if you have like elves or vampires or whatever that can live a long time. In which case, who knows? Think creatively down that line. But like, what are they doing in order to expand? Are they evolving their thoughts? Because if they are like a character, their minds can change. They can change with the times. I mean, even religious groups change, and you would think that they wouldn't, considering that they always think that they're, you know, this is the way. Consider how they do that. Or are they going to be rigid secret societies? No, it's just the 13 of us that are going to rule the world, and only 13, and no one else forever. Because that's going to be a much more like the ways that those two types of organizations work, and how they interact with the world, or the secrets they keep, or the types of people they allow in, those are going to be very different things. Okay, are they open? Are they closed? Are they exclusive? Or are they inclusive? Are they trying to grow, or are they trying to remain static? All of those things characteristics that you don't have to think of for a single NPC, but you do have to think of for a group.
If I can actually build off of that, the megacorps are a beautiful example. I actually look at a megacorp and I see their goal is to earn money for their shareholders. Their goal is to provide a service that is needed by society. Now, these services are most likely not required by society, but they can tell themselves they are. Look, health insurance is essential to make sure people get health care, right? We're just keeping people healthy. So, political parties. We just want to protect animals, cute animals. That's our goal. So we're going to sacrifice homeless people on the altar of protecting cute animals because our goal is to protect cute animals, and we're good guys for protecting cute animals. So that's why I tend to revolve around and focus on the noble motivation, because the path to hell is paved with good intentions. And when there are good intentions, it's a lot harder to just straight up murder the people who you disagree with, because they mean well. That's causing nightmares, but they mean well. They're not actual monsters.
Yeah. And sometimes there are going to be people within these organizations that are aligned with the organization because it is protective to them or is a means to an end. You know, like, I mean, even for myself, I vote in a certain way because I have a certain vision for the future. but I'm voting for this thing now because it's the system I have in place. It sucks. It's not what I want. In the future, I hope it's this. But for now, I have to align myself a certain way. And these are compromises a lot of people make. Now, there are other people who say, well, you shouldn't do that. There's this other possible option. But like, there's even things like within, obviously, right now, we have lots of factions. You can look at how they work out. But they're going to be people within those organizations. And they're not just faceless, mindless drones that, you know, you can do whatever with. I mean, if you're playing a type of game that's making your players think about these things, I'm assuming if you're really trying to create some factions, you're trying to create this type of interest. Maybe you don't care. Maybe you want to have a super evil, like, oh, it doesn't matter kind of organization. Sure. We kind of address this in the Means of Magic, because in the Means of Magic, you have these factions and basically everyone is controlled by them. And if you want to work, you're probably working for one of them. So if your goal as the players are to topple this system, who on the ground level are you willing to hurt? Because you're gonna hurt somebody, because everyone's basically aligned. Those are all fun ethical dilemmas for your players and your characters to deal with in the nice cozy safety of a TTRPG, unlike our real political world that we live in.
Every war has casualties. What are you willing to sacrifice for winning the war and whatever that gets you? And I'm not speaking specifically about actual, you know, gunplay, tanks, right, drones, whatever, war, but just what the fight, every fight, you know, you don't get off scot-free. There's something suffers, someone or something suffers.
Or at least doesn't get their way.
One of the next level considerations that I love doing on this is on the aforementioned metaphor of the boulders. Sometimes you're trying to figure out which direction the boulder is going to go, because no matter which way it goes, it's going to not hit and destabilize another boulder. So do you want to destabilize faction B, faction C, or faction D? And that lets you get into a lot more of the higher level politics and planning. And there's a lot of, it gives the players a lot of agency over how the world is going to be changing.
This is just reminding me that you should make sure that all of your players want to play a really deeply political intrigue game before you do this kind of stuff. It's all very interesting to me. I know that there are a lot of players that get frustrated when the actions they want to have are constantly faced with these cascading consequences. That can be very frustrating for certain players, and even for certain times. There are some games that I don't want to have to worry about that too. But if you get the right crowd together and you're doing all this stuff, all of the hard work that you are doing as the GM will pay off. But I think that there's a reason why a lot of GMs just want to use the factions that are already there listed, because it's so much work.
getting to thinking, got me thinking, Jason, when you talked about like whether we want to topple, you know, which of the boulders do we want to topple? And you can place and make it clear to the characters, to the players, that there are consequences to toppling each and every one of them. And balance those consequences in some way that's intriguing and that creates tension and drama, where you can say, well, if we topple Boulder A, if we take down this faction, to set the metaphor aside, if we take down this faction, it's going to gain us this thing that is a net positive, but it's going to hurt this small group of people very, very badly. If we topple this other organization B, it's going to be a net positive across overall, but it's going to hurt everybody a little bit in some other way. So, you know, do you want to turn, because human beings, people, we all know, like, you know, the slightest inconvenience, it doesn't take a lot for people to be pissed off that their, you know, that their situation has suddenly gotten a little more difficult. Do you want to, like, you know, the characters will have the dilemma. Do we hardcore screw this small group of people, or do we kind of a little bit screw everybody in order to ultimately gain this thing? And like, what does that do to the faction? What does that do to the people? What does that do if the people find out that you did this, that you were involved in it? What are their opinions toward you now? What are their attitudes? What are, you know, personal repercussions of doing that? Because everything's a chain reaction, unless you can manage somehow to keep it completely secret that you know, manipulated everything behind the scenes, which is a lot of fun. That's a whole thing unto itself, is figuring out how to make something happen without actually getting getting blamed or praised for it. Just be like, yep, that just happened. And look at all these great things that took place. I don't have
there's
a target
also
on my
the
back.
Longer there's the longer route option of creating a new system in place that will kind of cushion the blow of all these boulders toppling too. But that's a longer term solution, and takes some creativity on the part of the players, but also gives them the opportunity of creating their own type of faction and creating these networks and maybe pulling small pieces of a time at a time from the other factions. Like, ooh, we really need someone who knows a lot about the water treatment system, and they belong there. Let's get cozy with them specifically. And then, like, creating your own network, and then maybe, like, yeah, this is really gonna hurt this collapsing, this megacorp is gonna hurt these little farmers a lot, but because they are all I don't know, lithium miners, and we're gonna destroy this lithium company, maybe you all retrain them, the farmers, to, or the miners, to be yam farmers, whatever it ends up being. It's maybe not as glamorous, but it can work. And there are lots of creative ways. Your players will figure that out. Don't worry about that. If they don't, they don't.
And when in doubt, when you've described all these factions about how they're like Jason was talking about, like they think they're the good guy because they're doing this, but then there's also this dark side to them, that when the characters start making their decisions about what they're going to do, remind them all, hey, it's kind of like you're a faction and you're deciding that you're doing this good thing because you're the good guys. But in the process, you're also going to do this really bad thing and people are going to know about it. You're no different, are you? And see how they respond to that.
So,
what about?
Oh, no, go.
I was going to say, what about from, if we're moving off of the GM angle, let's start talking about the design. Like, okay, if you know you're putting all this effort in anyway, making all these cool factions, and you're a game designer, put the factions in your game. But how do you go beyond just like, ah, here is who they are, and here are their, this is, how do we incorporate that into the design of the game and make them integral? The work that goes beyond the GMing side, basically.
There's a bunch of things there. I'd like to give a shout out to Apocalypse World and Dungeon World, which I'm terrified to realize how old those games actually are now. But Fronts, and Countdown Clocks and Blades, they're delightful tools for keeping track of the stuff that's going on in the background. That is just, you know, it's lonely fun for the GM until something goes on and you've noticed, oh, you've been dropping hints about the civil war happening over in Genericistan. Wow, that's interesting. Now we're having to deal with that. So I think having those kinds of tracking of changing actions and motivations is a delightful design tool.
Yeah, video games obviously can handle this in a very elegant fashion because they can just have a computer calculating bits. Like, oh, for example, the Fallout games, you do an action for, you do a certain quest, and then you gain renown in a certain faction. And that's all nicely automatically tabulated for you. You can borrow a lot of that too, but you have to make it manageable for the GMs. Because a GM cannot, unfortunately, be a computer that can process all of these things all of the time. Clocks are great. I love a clock for this kind of stuff. Like, very, very simple. It's going to make a symbol out of this. We're going to count it down. We're going to count it up. And when I remember to change it is when I remember to change it. But it's also, it serves kind of as a reminder for the GM that, oh yes, there is this stuff happening. That's cool. It's hard to do because it does put a lot of that system puts a lot of the work on the GMs to remember.
And Jason, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe, did we talk last time we talked with you? Did we talk about relationship webs?
Yes, I believe we did.
Last time or maybe the time before. You can do that. Like, again, these factions are kind of like characters. You can develop that sort of thing between the different factions. How do they relate to each other? How does faction A relate to faction B? And how does B relate to C and so forth? And, you know, assign a descriptor that describes, you know, what the relationship is between the two of them. And then you can have a set series of descriptors that are like they're at odds or they're at war or they're neutral or they're partnered. And then, you know, if your character has an in with one faction that is at war with another faction, well, they probably have enemies now. But if they are, you know, if they're partnered with another faction, then maybe you have now that means you have a way to get yourself, you know, get the character introduced to somebody else. And so it becomes something for people to keep track of as far as like the players can keep track of it. You can keep track of it as it goes. And then as those relationships change, it creates problems for the characters to overcome where suddenly like they're in with this, like, oh, we had, you know, we had a NPC over here in this partnered faction that was helping us get some information. And now suddenly the two factions are at odds. And this NPC is kind of ghosted us and the information's all dried up and we're only halfway to where we need to be. And they're the only person that can get us. So do we repair the relationship? Do we try to get the information from the NPC in some other way? It creates a complexity of relationships between the factions that you see with characters. And then there can be that same sort of relationship too with some of the NPCs with the faction. Like, you know, you've got an NPC that your characters know in this faction. Are they in good standing with the faction? Are they kind of in trouble? Are they being punished? Are they drop dead? I will die for this faction. That colors. And that can literally be just like you've got your little NPC notebook of where you're keeping your information. You can just kind of keep a note and have a set number of like terms that you use to describe how the character relates to the faction. And then every so often, things that the characters do or things that happen between the factions or things that happen in the world changes some of those relationships.
One of the things, so when I design, I try specifically to figure out at what level of remove are the factions interacting with the player characters. So for instance, in one of my games, the player characters never start off with relationships with the factions themselves. They start off with relationships with NPCs, and those NPCs have relationships with the factions. So they may not even be members of it. They may simply be affected by the actions of the faction. So you have a lot of indirect influences happening. By contrast, in one of my other games, every character is a member of multiple factions, and you know your friend over there because you're belonging to the same faction, and your friend over there because you belong to another faction. And it's sort of the multiple allegiances, and that, like, sort of that interaction changes how gameplay functions. So how directly do you want the factions to be influencing the characters and vice versa?
If you want that really strong connection and you want it to, like, you want a value on it too, instead of just like, here's what they're doing kind of behind the scenes, you could also tie in with your mechanics of your game the relationships that they have with one faction or another to actual roles, maybe it like or card flips or whatever you're doing, like whatever system you're using. Maybe it can increase their odds of being successful or decrease their odds of being successful, maybe for certain things, like write that into the rules. Like if they have a positive relationship with the underground apple sellers and they are trying to purchase something on the market, this is going to help them or it's going to hurt them. Or maybe it will help their intimidation. Like, oh, you're Oh, you're wearing the little assassin's badge. Maybe. Ooh, I know that they're kind of tough, and like if I knew that Tony Soprano was after me, I would be way more afraid than if it was just like Joe Schmo, not tied to any sort of mafia organization. Those things you can add, like a lot of GMs will do this anyway. But if you have it written in your roles, like, oh, it gives you this much, it kind of lifts some of that burden from the GM to make those decisions. Which, you know, as much as you can't do, in my opinion, if you're playing a game with a GM, if you're writing a game that has a GM, you're trying to make it as easy for that person as possible to make the game really cool.
Jess, can I just say that I love the idea of a game world where the assassins wear a badge? Because that is a baller move. Like, not only are you out to kill and everybody knows it, and you announce it.
Too real. So I love lifting stuff from video games wherever I can, and just the ability to have reputation opinions related to individual characters, to factions, of the faction really likes Bob but hates Julie. So if we need to deal with the faction, we need to send Bob in. If we need to kill someone in the faction, Julie's our woman.
Yeah. That's a way to also get the players to be doing different stuff and not like, oh, everyone run in the room, we're all gonna try doing the same action five times over until someone gets it right. You can't do that if they all have different relationships, especially if you're trying something relationship wise. It also, like, if a player wants to keep, like, a player, not just the character, but the player wants to keep their affiliation nice because it's helping them in some way, they, as the character, are going to probably argue against doing things that are going to harm that, even if it's against the greater good of the whole group. And that can cause some really fun drama and tension in the group, too.
And one thing that I love doing as well with this is set up mechanical advantages and disadvantages with positive or negative. So in one of my other games, I design a lot of games, can you tell? If you have a high positive reputation with something, you're really good at getting information from and convincing people from that group to do a thing. But you're really bad at protecting yourself against them. And conversely, if you have a very negative relationship, you're really good at protecting yourself against them. So betrayal really hurts. And the more you trust an organization, the more they can betray you.
Well, you can't be betrayed by someone you don't trust.
Exactly. Exactly. So sometimes, you know, paranoia, it's not paranoia if everyone is really out to get you.
Yeah. You can also incorporate faction moves within your game as well. There are certain things organizations can do that an individual cannot. So they can move mass amounts of people. They have more resources at hand that they can spend. They can do things in a much more dramatic fashion than even just like your 5 or 6 person character group can do. And then writing in some of those moves that they can make, whether they are moves that the GM has to, or whoever else has to, like, randomize in some way to determine success or failure, or if it's just something that can happen, like in Powered by the Apocalypse type games, where, oh, it's just this is a soft move or a hard move that I'm pulling as the GM with my faction moves. Those are all things that you can incorporate and think about too. That again, they give the GM ideas of things to do and make it easier for them to pull the weight. Especially, you know, like I said, keeping all this stuff in mind is it's this this is this type of stuff is harder than just I have here are my characters Susie Samara and who else do you have? Amir, that was the other person I added Susie in there for whatever reason. That's easy. Three people, you connect all of them to like seven different factions. That's way harder to keep balanced. So just give the GM lots of ideas. And even when you're writing up your factions within your game, like you can give them some if-then statements. If the players do this, then the faction will do
this.
So
this is actually a beautiful segue to the limits on cognitive ability. Humans can only hold a certain number of things in our heads at any point in time.
Yes.
This is actually why organizations and hierarchies exist. Because throughout the ages, you can't organize 100 people at a level at a flat scale because you can't remember everyone and know what everyone is doing.
Or communicate
but
with them.
You can organize 20 groups of five and each of those has a leader, and all of those leaders are in groups and they interact with each other and they respond to someone one level higher, because that way all you have to do is pay attention to your little subgroup,
right?
And all your boss has to do is deal with your subgroup and their peers. And like that kind of, that's why we made hierarchies. So limit the number of factions you have in play. I've typically find the correct range is somewhere between 3 and 6. Because anything more than about 6 factions and it becomes a nightmare. It's one of my complaints about Blades in the Dark. Because it offers a brilliant tapestry of factions, and it's impossible to keep track. There's just so many. But you don't, a game that has 2 factions, let's say the Establishment Vampires and the Rebellious Vampires. Okay, you got 2 factions there. It's a little two-dimensional and binary. It doesn't quite resonate as much.
You want the rock, paper, scissors thing. And keeping it smaller, also gives the people playing your game the opportunity to take control in a way that can be fun for a lot of groups where they are creating their own. They're adding their own stuff. They're twisting and changing things. If you have everything really, really granular, all you're doing is writing a fantasy novel at that point. And the idea is to have some sort of interaction with this text rather than making it incredibly set in stone.
So this brings up one other little design innovation that I saw in a game from Black Armada Games. Josh Fox produced a game called Last Fleet. And it includes it's a Battlestar Galactica with the serial numbers filed off game. But it includes a concept of doing things at scale. There's ways that you can, with this advantage, you can do a thing at scale. So instead of being able to pilot one fighter, you can pilot an entire squadron. Instead of healing one person from a wound, you can triage an entire battlefield. And that kind of thing is beautiful with factions. If you have sufficient X influence over the faction, you can do things at scale with their help. And I think that's a beautiful tool that we can take advantage of.
Well, Jason, thank you so much for showing up. I know, again, like I said at the beginning, I don't think I've picked up a single one of your books that hasn't had factions in them. So I think that you were perfectly placed for this topic. Thank you so much. And Do you want to plug your stuff? Where can we find you on
All
the
right,
internet and
yes,
things
thank
like
you.
that?
So you can find me at genesisoflegend.com or genesisoflegend.ca because I'm Canadian, eh? All of our stuff is available at Indie Press Revolution or Drive-Thru RPG. We are currently in the process of getting once more into the void out into the world, which is a lot of fun. So I hope to see people on the internet.
You can find me on the internet and see me there at wannabegames.com or on DriveThruRPG or Itch under that same name, or personally at Joska somewhere in places, or Jess is Awful in other places.
I'm Nerdburger Craig on various social medias. My website is nerdburgergames.com. There is a web store on there that has some of the fancy schmancy books that got offset print runs. They are the same cost as the print on demand books over at Drive-Thru RPG, which contains all the rest of my stuff. And yeah, I'm going to plug it again here. Gen Con, everybody, come by and see. Jason, are you making it to Gen Con?
No, unfortunately, for reasons, some of which are I need to go and spend time with my two nieces, one of which is quite young.
Aww.
So, priorities.
But Jason's games will be there.
My games will be there
and
at the IGDN
because
booth.
Of organizations.
Because of organizations, because of the
Thank
IGDN
you, organizations.
And Indie Press Revolution. Yes, but Jess and I will both be there too, so you can come find us.
Excellent. So go find them and buy my books because I can sell at scale thanks to our faction.
Yay, factions. Thank you to our opening and closing theme song, which is Avail by Steph Sachs, licensed under Creative Commons. Thank you, Steph Sachs, and thank all of you for listening. We'll see you back here next time. Bye-bye.